this has been set up. It's been a plan of Michael's. I believe that Michael probably thought that, and maybe hoped that Elvis would come back. It would be the greatest comeback in world history. And Michael probably thought, you know, except I'm going to do it, except I'm coming back.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Lord of America!
For 8 months, I excused everything until I just couldn't do it anymore. And then when I really dug deep into that, it was the most incredible story ever told, and I was going to tell it. I'm not into death hoaxes. I'm into Michael Jackson. The story has not been fully told yet, but these are the things that make any logical person say,
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. That theme music you just heard for this installment of the program was, of course, provided by our good buddy Pete Diggins. You can check out more of his work at www.aurophonic.com, AuroPhonic.com. Check it out. No in-house notes this week, no pressing BOA news, so let's just roll on in to this edition of the program. This time around here on the show, we are going to venture into the world of pop conspiracy with our guest Pearl Jr., who is the creator of the film Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead? Beyond the really amazing material here in the program this week, the cool thing about this show is that you can check out Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead? On Netflix. So all the folks who are listening right now and are Netflix subscribers, you can head on over to their streaming feature and check out Pearl Jr.'s film as a sort of supplement to this episode. What you're going to hear this week, of course, explores the theory that Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, faked his own death. And in this engaging conversation, Pearl Jr. is going to explain how she came to believe that Michael Jackson faked his death and will outline the many aspects of his demise which raise serious suspicions and suggest that there may be more to the story than the mainstream media has been telling you. We're going to cover the controversies over Jackson's middle name on his death certificate and autopsy, the alleged final photo of MJ in the ambulance before he died. Along the way, we're also going to examine the theory that Michael Jackson was murdered, and we'll ultimately explore why and how Michael Jackson would fake his own death. Now, I know a lot of folks out there are probably rolling their eyes right now, wondering why we would tackle such a controversial, strange, foolhardy topic as the Michael Jackson death hoax. Well, all I'm going to ask is that you have an open mind and keep on listening and listen to what Pearl Jr. has to say, and then make up your own mind at the end of the show as to whether Michael Jackson really is dead or alive. Altogether, it is an episode which provides some tantalizing food for thought and additionally some water cooler conversation that will be sure to spook your coworkers as Pearl Jr. joins us to delve into the Michael Jackson death hoax theory. For those of you unfamiliar with Pearl Jr., allow me to provide you with a little background on her. Pearl Jr. is the producer of the films Behind the Scenes at the Michael Jackson Trial, Barack Obama, The Power of Change, Michael Jackson, The Trial and Triumph of the King of Pop, and Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead? She's also the author of the book Pseudocide, Did Michael Jackson Fake His Death to Save His Life? And she has served as a credentialed reporter for Michael Jackson's 2005 child molestation trial and is currently covering the involuntary manslaughter trial of Dr. Conrad Murray. Her website is www.michaeljacksoninsider.com. Pretty simple, all one word, michaeljacksoninsider.com. Check it out. With all that said, my friends, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on September 26, 2011. Pearl Jr. talking about the Michael Jackson death hoax. on BOA Audio Season 6.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. And we have got a very compelling program for you here this week. Very excited about this one. Our guest is Pearl Jr., and she is the woman behind the film Alive. Is Michael Jackson Really Dead? As well as the e-movie book titled Pseudocide, Did Michael Jackson Fake His Death to Save His Life? And her website is MichaelJacksonInsider.com. And she's put together a pretty fascinating and thought-provoking case here that what we all saw play out in the media back in late June of 2009 with the death of Michael Jackson really wasn't the whole story, and that there is a really amazing story that's going on that, of course, a lot of the world hasn't heard about yet. But we're going to get into all that here tonight on the program. Very excited about this. I've seen the movie Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead? A couple of times, watched it this summer on Netflix and was like, I have got to talk to Pearl Jr. sometime soon. And then when I knew we were going to tape this interview, I sat down and watched the movie again. Still very compelling stuff. I actually watched it, had my mother in the room, so it's a good litmus test. And by the end of the movie, she was looking at things a lot differently. So I can't recommend this enough. I mean, this really, I know a lot of folks out there probably rolling their eyes. Give it a chance, folks, because there is some tremendous information in here and a lot of stuff that will really make you go, you're going to learn about a lot of that here tonight. Welcome to the program, Pearl. It is a pleasure, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, Tim. I'm glad to be talking about the other side of the story.
Absolutely, absolutely. I had sort of, you know, figured that this, like you said, other side of the story was out there, but I hadn't heard it, you know, put all together until I saw your movie. So it was like, wow, you know, there is this camp out there that thinks this, and they've really put together some amazing material here to give you some food for thought. Before we sort of get into this story, let's talk about Pearl Jr. Give us a little bit of a bio, a background. You know, who is Pearl Jr. and how did you get mixed up in all this?
Well, I'm an activist. I'm an author. I write books. I'm, you know, a professional corporate woman and quit corporate America pretty much to start my own production company, become an author, and change the world. Well, I ended up in the world of Michael Jackson. I landed a media credential for the 2005 child molestation trial through a series of events. And here in Los Angeles, which is where I'm from, I had a TV show called True Talk Straight Out of L.A. that was available, that we produced, we paid for the airtime and did everything, and that qualified me to be a credentialed media, and that was just the most craziest thing that ever happened. It wasn't pre-planned. It wasn't anything premeditated. It just happened, and I ended up there. And I learned so much about the King of Pop, and one of the most important things that I've learned is that he is no child molester. I mean, I couldn't believe that there was no evidence there, just hearsay from people that were pretty much proven to be sharks and manipulators and con artists, grifters, you know. And Michael Jackson, another thing, Michael Jackson is a heterosexual male. We learned that by seeing his 10-year stock of Playboy and Hustler and all the magazines that men have, you know, with his fingerprints and all DNA and
oh boy.
all that stuff. So Michael Jackson is a regular heterosexual and has no interest in having sex with little boys or little girls or anything like that. And I got to know the man from an insider point of view instead of just as a fan. Of course, I was a fan growing up, loving the Jackson 5 and Michael Jackson. And kind of fell off and then ended up back there. So I've been in the world of Michael Jackson for 6 years now. And we did stop for a moment and produce a documentary on Barack Obama called The Power of Change. And then we've produced or co-produced 4 documentaries on Michael Jackson.
Yeah, this is your production company, Elbow Grease Productions, right?
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you know, before we got into the interview, I got to ask just so I don't get the questions about why I didn't. What's the nature of the name Pearl Jr.? It's very sort of different. Is this like an artistic thing, or is this what's the connection here?
It's real. I have the same exact name as my mom.
Okay.
And my mother and father had three girls in a row, and my father was hoping for a boy, and he wanted to name him Junior after him. But I came out a girl, and so my mom named me Junior after her, and so it's real unique that you have a girl named Junior. So when I became an author, you know, you need to find interesting ways to stand out, you know, from the rest. And I just cut some things out, and I became Pearl Junior.
See, that's good. See, otherwise I'd be wondering about that for like the rest of my life. So we got that cleared up. So before we sort of get into the Michael Jackson death hoax, talk a little bit about what it was like covering the trial, because as you pointed out, it seems like it really just didn't add up. And obviously Michael Jackson was found not guilty. And what I find ironic too is that after he died, or, you know, as you would say, after he hoaxed his death, it seemed like the media completely did a complete 180 on the trial and everything, and accepted that he wasn't guilty on all of it. It was very sort of weird in that sense, you know, when somebody dies that the media changes their tune all of a sudden.
When someone passes, it does make you very sympathetic, but the facts, you know, when you think about the facts and you learn what happened, and we produced a documentary called Michael Jackson, The Trial and Triumph of the King of Pop, in which we tell the facts of the story, and we tell you what the media, big media wigs left out. And one of the most important things that happened in 93, a lot of people think Michael paid for that, and there has been research saying that Michael's insurance paid that $20 million, and the kid has come out reportedly and said Michael never touched him. And so way back from 93, it was a lie. And then the allegations 10 years later in 2003 was nothing but a copycat. It was kind of like a family of grifters who wanted to hit Michael at his Achilles heel. And they just copycatted and figured he would pay. And he said, no, I'm fighting it. And he was just tired of everybody just dogging him. Michael's a really super nice guy. Really, all he wanted to do was entertain people. And his life got complicated, so complicated, when all he really wanted to do was sing, dance, and make people happy, you know. And then later in life, he wanted to create film. And we pretty much called the media out on how they made him guilty before even the trial started, and how, you know, the executives and media companies picked and choose what information to cover. But Michael and the girly magazines, and Michael and no proof whatsoever. And another thing, you know, and I don't want to psychoanalyze this too much, but all the kids that Michael hung out with, none of them grew up to be gay. All of them are heterosexual, womanizing, love girls type of boys, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that is a sign, you know, that Michael wasn't wooing these boys and making these boys fall in love with them, and then, you know, having sex, you know, with him, you know, that it never happened. And all the kids came in, all the other boys that he hung out with said, Michael never touched me, called Macaulay Culkin, you know, Wade, this other guy that was a dancer. And then there was this one kid that came and said Michael tickled him, and they tried to blackmail him. And then, you know, Tom Mesereau, who did a great job as Michael's defense attorney, pretty much proved that was set up by Diane Diamond, who was Michael's, you know, she hated Michael, and she was pretty much the ringleader for the media to believe that he was guilty. And she paid this woman $20,000 and had her lie in a hotel room in downtown Los Angeles, you know. So it was really kind of tragic and very, very, very sad that someone who wanted to make the world a better place and who wanted to, you know, just create, you know, a happy place, especially for children. He figured, you know, if children were more loved, they would grow up to be nicer adults. And that was his answer to world peace. It may sound naive and silly, but in his mind, that made sense to him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because I had seen some excerpts from the Aphrodite Jones book, too, that's like, you know, the mainstream media, they were sort of, they wanted Michael Jackson to be found guilty, because that was like a cash cow that would keep producing more and more material for them over and over and over again. Michael Jackson in jail, jailhouse interviews, all, you know, people would give insider accounts on what he was like in jail. And it was like they had plans for years and years and years of material to glean off of his misfortune.
And Aphrodite, you know, is a good friend of mine, and I met her during the 2005 trial, and she was anti-Michael during the trial. And one time they were, she came in and she was plunking down in her seat, and she decided to sit next to me for whatever reason, right before trial started. And I said, "What's wrong?" She said, "They're calling me bitch, bitch, bitch." And I said, "Well, I mean, you're out there, you know, saying that Michael's guilty and not presenting the proper facts. What do you expect?"
Yeah.
And then I was done, you know. And after the trial, she called me and she said, "I want to have a meeting with you." And she said, "I saw your documentary and, you know, and I have to admit that I was wrong. And, you know, I want to make up for this." And that really shows a stand-up person to admit she was wrong. And she said, "I'm going to, you know, tell the truth about what happened." And she thanks me in her book. She gives me credit for giving her the courage to move ahead and tell the truth and to write the book. So I'm really proud of her for having the guts to admit she was wrong and to write that wrong.
Now, did you get the chance ever to meet Michael, you know, in the, I guess it would be about 4 years or so that you, you know, were sort of back in the mix before he allegedly passed away?
Well, in certain circumstances, I would, it's hard to answer that because the safe one is to say no, but it would not be absolutely accurate. I have been in close contact with his publicist, with his manager, with me and Michael have talked through people to each other, through airways, lots of different ways. And it was the weirdest thing on Carrollwood, which is the house in which they think he died in, where he disappeared in. And, a friend of mine that I had met at the 2005 trial, she owns Star Maps, and she sells maps to Star's home. Anyway, she had been on that corner for 10 years, and I couldn't believe it. She called me one day, and she said, "Pearl, what does Grace look like?" And Grace was the children's nanny, and I was like, "Girl, Michael is not moving in that house. Stop tripping. You are Michaeled out," and Michael actually moved into that house, so I had an excuse and a reason to hang out at that house, and Michael would come out and I would videotape and he would say hi to the fans and hi and stuff like that. So I was very aware. I had been to that house where fans literally camped out and outside of his house. I had been there the day before, the 24th, I was down there, 24th, the day before the death announcement. And I saw Dr. Murray's car leave at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that day, which is kind of weird if he stayed overnight all the time. And the fans did not tell me that a doctor had been spending the night until the day before. And I asked them, I said, "Well, how long has the doctor been spending the night?" And they said 10 days. And then when I go to the preliminary hearing, I'm hearing that he's been getting Propofol shipped to his baby mama's house, his girlfriend's house, since April 6th. And I'm wondering, why didn't the fan tell me? The fans would tell me a lot of stuff that would go on because they trusted me, because I was one of the only people during the trial that really stood up for the truth and really went against the system and really stuck to the side of justice and truth and honor and just having some, you know, dignity in what you do.
And you know, I was trying to convey this to a cousin of mine who's young. He's like 12 years old. A lot of people don't, you know, for the younger listeners, I'm in my early 30s, so I kind of, you know, was young myself sort of in when Michael Jackson peaked. But it's like, it's hard for people in this 24/7 news cycle, internet age to really fathom just how massive Michael Jackson was in, you know, at his peak in the 80s.
Yes.
And early 90s, and obviously still up until the time of his death, but it was a different sort of a fame. It was, you know,
right.
An unfortunate
infamous.
Sort of infamy. Yeah, exactly. But mm-hmm. even during, you know, the peak there, it was, like, unbelievable. Like, it's hard to even put into words. Like, imagine, like, Lady Gaga times 1,000. I mean, that's, like, as close as you can go.
Yes.
I mean, he was that big. And it was, this was back in the day when, you know, you wouldn't really get celebrity coverage on TV as much as you do now. Not nearly as much. And it was, like, all Michael Jackson all the time when he was at his peak. So it was
and no
a different
internet.
World. Exactly.
No internet back then either.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now let's fast forward to June 25th, 2009. Where were you when you heard the news that Michael Jackson had died? And at what point did you start to think there's more to this story than we're being told?
I was at UCLA Hospital. Linda, the map lady who sells house, she called me 2 minutes after the ambulance went into the house. And she said, Pearl, you know, an ambulance just went into Michael's house. And I was like, oh, my God, what could it be? And, you know, then she had to, she called some other fans, Michael's publicists. I think she even tried to call Joe and inform the family that an ambulance at the house. Now, I'm the first person in the world news agency to tweet that something was wrong at the house. I tweeted it at 12:43. And it took me a few minutes because I didn't want to alarm the fan base prematurely. So all I tweeted was, an ambulance just went into Michael's house. Don't know what for. I was thinking maybe the gardener cut himself or something. The last thing I was imagining that Michael Jackson could be in distress. Mm-hmm. Now, because I was just there the day before, like I said, and the fans told me Michael was fine. I saw the choreographer go inside the gate. I saw Dr. Murray leave, and I didn't know who Dr. Murray was. I didn't have any idea until on the news a day or two later, they showed his car being towed from there, and I was like, oh my God, there's his car. That's the same car that I saw leave. So I was under the impression on the 24th that Michael was fine. So I immediately got dressed after I got the phone call, and I talked to a few other people. I called Joe. His message was full. I called Michael's brother, Randy, and I was trying to get in touch with the family, saying that, you know, an ambulance is at the house, but of course they already knew. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to go to the house. I'm almost there, and Linda's assistant called and said, Pearl, go to UCLA. The ambulance just left. Go to UCLA. And I hadn't yet, so it wasn't a detour or anything. I was still on my way because UCLA and Michael's house are only a few minutes away. Yeah. So I went ahead and went to UCLA. And when I got to UCLA, it was quiet. I only saw one fan there. The SUVs were there, two dark blue SUVs. One of them still had on their hazard lights. And I was looking around for people, and I saw one girl named Talithia, and I just fell in her arms and said, what's going on? What's happening? And she said, it's not good. And then I just watched the crowd swell, and people, friends and the media, and everyone was calling, asking me what was going on, and is he okay? I saw Catherine go into the hospital, and I just watched the crowd swell. My cell phone lost a charge, which was horrible. Then I was interviewed by media sources, and at that time, it was either a coma, then it became he died of cardiac arrest. And I remember saying, if he died of cardiac arrest, he died of a broken heart, because the world really did break the heart of Michael Jackson. And then I heard that he had died, and I was just absolutely devastated. And later on that day, I did a radio interview about it, and it took me probably about 8 months to really say, okay, I'm surrendering to the death hoax. I had fought the death hoax because I am a sensible person. I am someone who doesn't believe in conspiracies easily, without proof and without knowledge. The first thing people say is, oh yeah, just like Elvis, you know, and that's a natural reaction. And even Cecil, who is my fiance and my business partner, I would have to be on the phone whispering because he thought I was crazy, you know, talking about the clues of the death hoax. And then in his library, in his collection of books, guess what I find? It's Elvis Alive book, right? Okay, is Elvis alive? And that's why the book is in the documentary, because we had that book in our library. And then I just decided after 8 months, and I could no longer excuse the multitude of clue after clue and inconsistency and things that didn't make sense and the setups and the evidence and, you know, just all was just overwhelming. And fans were calling me, asking me to check into it. Please, Pearl, listen to us. Please, please. And then I decided 8 months later, when I had looked up this website domains, I went into the website domains, and there was a website domain called comebackmichaeljackson.com and Michael Jackson Comeback. And one of them was registered on June 25th, 2009, which is awfully peculiar. Why would Comeback Michael Jackson be registered on the day he died? And then Michael Jackson Comeback was registered on Valentine's Day in 2007. And Michael made a point, and this is it, to say it's all for love. L-O-V-E, and that became kind of the part of the promo package, is all for love, L-O-V-E. And if you you know anything about Michael Jackson, he loves clues and practical jokes and pranks and all that stuff. So at that point, I just decided to dive into the death hoax and write the book Suicide, and read the Is Elvis Alive book, and I'm three quarters of the way through it, I threw the book across the room and went, no way, because it was exactly the same story. I could not believe all the parallels. It was as if Michael followed that book like the Holy Grail. Like, you know, it was unbelievable. And I read that book in one day. And then I started writing the book Suicide, and I've been a believer ever since.
You make a compelling case in the film. So, I mean, I can't, you know, the jury's out, I guess you could say, for me. And before I was, you know, I looked at the thing on Netflix and I was like, what is this? This is, you know.
This is stupid. This is silly, old brother.
I don't call anything stupid. I've been doing this too long to think anything is stupid at this point. But it was like, what? This is a reach, I guess, the best way to put it. But
yeah.
After I seen the film, it was like, well, you know, there's a lot there that's pretty interesting. Now,
Maybe
we should start with the biggest dog, I guess you could say, or the best nugget. What really stands out to you as sort of the real wow clue in the whole mythos here of the death hoax?
I'll give you the one that I thought was the biggest at that time, because we are dealing with a span of over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was Joe Jackson's behavior. Joe Jackson raised those boys and took those boys on tour. He was the one that traveled with those boys. He was the one that protected those boys. He's the one that disciplined those boys. He is the one that must have had the perfect mix of encouragement and discipline. You know, because if he just beat them and they were scared to death, they sure wouldn't have turned out all that great music that we know that the Jacksons have done. And Michael and Janet and all the rest of the family sure wouldn't have turned into very giving, charitable people. So Joe Jackson's behavior was very nonchalant, and I kept waiting for Joe to lose it and you know, pretty much fall apart, and he never did. And one Joe did fall apart at the 2005 trial that I witnessed. There was an announcement of a false verdict that came in, and Joe was at the car wash, and somebody called Joe and panicked and said there was a verdict or something, and Joe raced to the courtroom in Santa Maria, and he was moving his way through the crowd, and he was trembling, and he was shaking. He was like, move out of the way, where's my son? Where's my son? And he was just frantic, and you could see a father's, you know, straight panic that, you know, because none of Joe's boys were going to jail, period. And Joe's boys were not joining gangs, and Joe's kids were going to be successful, and Michael, and Joe was absolutely a mess, and he was going to pretty much tear anybody apart if they tried to take Michael from him.
Mm-hmm.
And once I saw that, I knew the love that Joe had for his children, his family, and especially Michael. Anyway, Joe never lost it, and I've had many, many, many conversations with Joe. I think I've talked to Joe more than any other family member. And Joe just seemed to be kind of like, so I knew something was up then. Now, the biggest clue to this day now is the fact that there's still no name on the grave. Over 2 years later, there is still no name on the grave. And to follow that up, Michael is not listed in the Forest Lawn database.
Mm-hmm.
And the grave is tucked away so nobody can really see that there's no name on the grave. And I had called Forest Lawn a month after the funeral that they had, the burial, September 3rd. And I called in October of 2009, and I asked, you know, fans had told me, Forest Lawn is denying that Michael's there. And Forest Lawn, I said, well, where is Michael's grave? And they said, look, we don't have Michael's body, and we've never had it. That is what Forest Lawn told me. Then
wow.
I talked to some Forest Lawn people just recently, and they told me that on the burial, September 3rd, I remember that because it was a Temptation song, September, the day my daddy died, it was, you know, September 3rd. So that's why I remember it's a Temptation song.
Okay.
But anyway, they said that no personnel worked that day except executives. Everybody had to take the day off. Okay, nobody was allowed on those grounds. It was secure. And, you know, even the lady at Forest Lawn is like, yeah, something weird is happening with this death of Michael Jackson. So that's the biggest clue to me, is no proof of the burial. And then we can go on and on, no open casket, the ambulance photos fake, you know.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into all that as we go along here. Now, what I find interesting, so they're saying that the body's not there at all.
They had told me in October 2009, they told me, we don't have Michael's body and we've never had it.
Wow. See, that's revelatory. I mean, you can't even put words to that. That's strange.
And that still didn't sell me. You got to remember, that's June, July, August, September, October. That's 4 months. I wasn't convinced until February.
Right. Well, I'm going to throw some devil's advocate, you know, points
of
here
course,
as we go
do.
Along. Because, I mean, what if... Part of me thinks, you know, that I guess, you know, I come from having seen all this sort of play out in the media, and I've seen Joe Jackson sort of get this bum rap as this jerk. So to me, it you know, my skeptical mind says, well, you know, maybe he sees the opportunity that comes out of the death of his son here, that they're going to be able to really develop this into their own cottage industry. And so that sort of colors his perspective, and maybe the family's got the body and they're planning on doing something, you know, Elvis-esque with it and turning Neverland into sort of the Graceland of the West, if you will.
Well, then tell us that. Don't lie, you know, and have, you know, flowers sent up to Forest Lawn and all this stuff, you know, say, you know, Michael is in a, you know, we buried him somewhere else, but they've led us to believe that he's buried there. I mean, that's what, you know,
that's
so they've
true.
Had a memorial there. They've had three ceremonies, and at none of the ceremonies was the casket ever open. And I like to add that Catherine nor Joe have seen the dead body.
Interesting. Okay.
Jermaine and Latoya supposedly have, and some few other people, but Catherine and Joe have not ever said that they've seen Michael's body dead.
Well, now, I was going to get into this towards the end of the interview, but I feel like I want to ask it now, so we're just going to get into this. Now, have you, you know, you're putting this story out there. Obviously, it's around on the internet and everything, but you've really sort of put it all together in an amazing way. Have you heard from... You know, and you don't have to name names or get too specific here, but have you heard from either family members or close associates who sort of say, you know, on the sly to you, hey, Pearl, you're on the right track, or even dissuading you from it and saying, hey, Pearl, you know, you got to let it go. He's gone, or something like that. Have you heard any reaction really from the Michael Jackson camp?
Well, insiders that work for the Jacksons, when I did my first book, Suicide, Did Michael Jackson Fake His Death to Save His Life, in May 2010, Michael's manager, Ramon K. Bain, who was his, before, you know, all the This Is It manager with Leonard Rohl and Frank Delio, she was his manager and she was his publicist from 2003, I believe, to 2008, the end of 2008. And she had a radio show, and she called me and had me introduce the book, Suicide, on a radio show, okay? And I thought that was very odd timing and, you know, stuff like that. I would not ever put the Jacksons in a situation where I would make it very uncomfortable for them. So I wouldn't ask, because if the modus operandi is Michael is dead, I mean, what do I expect? I mean, am I an idiot? They're gonna be the ones that reveal that Michael isn't. But I've had conversations with the Jackson family publicist about the death hoax, long conversations about it. I've had, after my book Suicide came out, I was asked to help promote this event called Forever Michael, in which Catherine and Tito were, you know, it was for Catherine's book, Never Can Say Goodbye, and Tito performed, and Genevieve, Randy's daughter, performed, and the family was there. So I've been involved in Jackson family events, and I wouldn't dare put them on the spot because it's a wink, wink, nod, nod thing.
Yeah.
So I cannot say that they've ever told me that Michael's not dead. I can just tell you situations in which they've involved me. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, you kind of know what to do.
Exactly.
And then there was one incident with Jermaine. And I think, and it was funny the timing of this, Jermaine has come out and said that Michael is dead. And he told that to the Death Hoax community. And then 2 days later, Jermaine releases the cover of his book. And then within that same week, he pays off his child support, you know. And then Jermaine says, oh, don't worry, believers, we're all one. We all love Michael. So he kind of recanted all that. And then in Jermaine's book, one of the heartbeat of the Death Hoax community is the middle name, which is kind of like from the Elvis thing, Elvis Aaron Presley, 1A or 2As. And that's why people didn't believe that Elvis was really dead, because of the wrong spelling of the middle name. Now, with Michael, his middle name is Michael Joe Jackson.
Yeah.
And all the death documents have Michael Joseph Jackson. And in Jermaine's book, even though Jermaine talks about his brother and his brother being dead, there's a wink, wink, nod, nod on page 43 in which Jermaine says, I don't know where the rumor came from that Michael's middle name is Joseph. His middle name is Joe, as on his birth certificate. So, you know, and that's to us believers that we know. We know what that means, because the death certificate, the autopsy, the will, even the estate has Michael Joseph Jackson. So there's a lot of weird things going on because, you know, his real name is Michael Joe. So correct it. The autopsy says that the body was identified by a driver's license. I mean, come on, please. You know, Michael has one of the biggest families in the world, you know, and it's identified by the, and where did he get the driver's license from? He was supposed to be in a hospital gown and pretty much nude, you know. So where, you know, what pocket did he have the driver's license in? And his driver's license says Michael Joe Jackson. So does his passport. Even the passport that is still yet to expire has Michael Joe Jackson on it. So why, if they identified Michael with the autopsy, with the driver's license, why does the autopsy say Michael Joseph Jackson?
Well, that's the million-dollar question here. Is that, if it's a death hoax, do you think it's some kind of like legal way of sort of circumventing the legalities of it, or like what is, yes, what would be the reasoning behind that?
Yes, I do believe that. I totally, because during the 2005 trial, Tom Snedden, who was the prosecutor, who really much pretty much stalked Michael and, you know, was obsessed with, you know, taking Michael down, discovered before the trial began, but during all the preliminary stuff, that Michael's middle name was Joe. So you'll see preliminary hearing documents under the name of Michael Joe Jackson, the People versus Michael Joseph Jackson, and then you find out that it's changed to the People versus Michael Joe Jackson, and the FBI even confirmed that Michael's middle name is Michael Joe Jackson. His name is Joe. Catherine has confirmed that his middle name is Michael Joe Jackson. Joe has confirmed it. LaToya has confirmed it. Jermaine has confirmed it. His name is Michael Joe Jackson. So, you know, so maybe all the stuff with Joseph, maybe that is the dead body's name. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And just to sort of put a little clarification on it for people who are listening, you know, it's like, and then all of the documents surrounding the death have the middle name as Michael Joseph Jackson.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's not his name. His name is Michael Joe Jackson. Mm-hmm.
Very weird, very weird. Now, I found it interesting, too, that in the movie you point out that there was actually, I guess you could say, a previous Michael Jackson death hoax on Christmas Day of 2008. So about actually literally 6 months before.
Absolutely.
The alleged death from some DJ who claimed that Michael Jackson had died on Christmas Day.
Of a drug overdose exactly 6 months prior. Come on. Yeah, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, yes. And then I researched who the owners of this radio station are, and they were two brothers that owned a station in Santa Maria, which is where Michael's from, where Neverland is. Isn't that odd? Da-dun-da-dun.
Interesting, interesting. So maybe this was something that was floated out there to either test the waters or,
yes,
or what? Who knows?
It was absolutely set out there to test the waters. This has been set up. It's been a plan of Michael's. I believe that Michael probably thought that, and maybe hoped that Elvis would come back. It would be the greatest comeback in world history. And Michael probably thought, you know, except I'm going to do it, except I'm coming back. Elvis didn't. You know, he's going to one-up Elvis. You know, he's going to one-up the Beatles. He's going to one-up. Michael's going to be the greatest. Michael is one ambitious dude.
Interesting. Well, we're going to get into that if he's going to come back and what you think of all that in a little bit, because I'm interested in that, because obviously that would be one of the biggest stories of all time if Michael Jackson returned.
Who else could do it?
I know. and another thing I found interesting from the film was the alleged last photo in the ambulance. You make a fantastic case that this is a fake. And I never even, you know, it may have trickled out later after the fact that it was a fake, but I never really heard that. Until I saw your film, I was under the impression that picture of him in the ambulance with the neck brace and the mask on for breathing was a legitimate photo until I saw the film, and then I was like, well, that really was the one that kind of turned the corner for me as I was watching the movie, where I sort of sat up in my seat and said, I got to start really giving this more credence than I thought. So talk a little bit about that whole thing.
Yeah, even Joe Jackson's attorney, Brian Oxman, who's been a family attorney of the Jacksons for over 20 years, and I know Brian, he even said it's a fake, you know. And why would you fake it? I mean, what would be the point of faking it? You know, the guys who had already traveled and took a lot of pictures of Michael, National Photo Group, you know, it's well documented that they photographed Michael for more than 10 years. And then you got the picture of a guy taking a picture of the ambulance. And then, you know, the other thing that makes the ambulance real fake, and when I went to the preliminary hearing, this is when I discovered this, the EMTs, you can only see their hand in the back of their head. You know, their faces are not in the photo. Mm-hmm. And so when I went and I saw the preliminary hearing, this is after I finished producing Alive, Is Michael Jackson Really Dead? And after, you know, Suicide had been out for 6-7 months. I went back and I looked at the photo. I was like, look at that. They were smart enough not to put the EMT's faces in the photo. How coincidental and convenient is that? It comes from a picture of Michael laying on the floor at a concert. And what they do nowadays, Photoshop is so easy, and technology is really pretty fascinating what one can do with technology. And there was a picture of that picture on an EMT official website, except for the real victim, their face was blotched out. And so and then also the EMT guys, one of them used to work for the Beverly Hills Fire Department. Now he's a trainer, and this picture came from a training website. The coincidences just get wilder and wilder. And they just superimposed that picture there. And then it looks like Michael had a neck brace on. And then if you look at the balloon, it's not really over the full mouth and the nose. And, you know, it just gets ridiculous once you, and then there's a vein. You can see the vein, you know, the veins were supposed to be collapsed. Supposed to be dead at the house. But, and another thing, Dr. Murray refuses to allow the EMT to pronounce Michael dead in that house, and refused to sign the death certificate as well. So at UCLA, this doctor, Rochelle Cooper, who one of the fans sent me her medical license, and it says M for male, but I know she's a female, was there when she testified, and she had to pronounce him dead, you know, because Dr. Murray refused to.
Yeah. Interesting. Very, very weird stuff. And see, it just goes to show you that what you see in the mainstream media, oftentimes the corrections end up on page Z or something like that. Like I said, they may have cleared up this whole thing about the photo that I never heard of.
I've never seen any major media clear up about the photo. The fan base, Michael Jackson fan base, it's well known, you know, even Brian Oxman, and a lot of people have said it was fake. So, you know, there's enough information if anybody wants to search it out on the internet that it is fake. And everything that I say, I do provide evidence and proof in that movie and also in the Suicide e-movie book as well.
Right. Now, talk a little bit about the Elvis death hoax. Are you a believer in this, or is this something that you think Michael just was inspired by the mythos of that?
I think he was just inspired by him. I'm not into death hoaxes. I'm into Michael Jackson,
okay.
You know. And there are some bizarre things about Elvis's death. And, you know, you could take him or leave him. When I read the book, Is Elvis Alive? It was pretty interesting, but it doesn't hold a candle to the plethora, the myriad, the vast amount of Michael Jackson not dead information.
Yeah.
His pales in comparison.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's pretty overwhelming stuff. There's a lot in the film that it just hit us with so much stuff in there that it's like, wow.
And the Suicide e-movie book that was written 6 months before, it has double the information.
Oh, wow.
The Suicide, there's more. There's more information. I just couldn't. I figured it was already information overload. And I figured, you know, for the mainstream people who are seeing this for the first time, I couldn't put everything in there. It would be too long and it would be too complicated. So I just took the best of the best information and put it in there.
Okay, okay. And I thought also it was interesting you lay out a lot of clues that are in the film, This Is It. And especially the thing with Gilda, which I thought was just like really weird. In and of itself.
Yeah, isn't that something? The Gilda movie, the fans had been saying that, you know, it was about a fake death. So, of course, I ordered the movie. They don't have the movie at your local Blockbuster. So I had to order it. And I'm not going to take someone on their word. I'm going to double check everything,
mm-hmm.
you know. And sure enough, the movie has a subplot of a man who fakes his death and comes back. So why else did Michael put that in This Is It?
It's very weird, yeah. For folks who haven't seen the film, there's a clip of the film Gilda with Michael superimposed over the lead of the film, and the movie, as Pearl just told you, is about a man who fakes his death. So the coincidences are eerie. If they're not, if this isn't a death hoax, this is just a really creepy, eerie level layer of coincidences here.
And then the one that Michael left during, you know, the most famous choreography in the world is Michael Jackson Motown 25 doing Billie Jean,
mm-hmm.
you know, where he tosses the hat, and I mean, that's catapulted him to super worldwide stardom, that performance, even though I always knew what a great, wonderful, talented little boy he was, in love with him since I was, you know, 6 years old. But that catapulted him, and so in This Is It, he changes the choreography in Billie Jean, and he pretty much mimes, I want you to see that I'm going underground. I want you fans to see that I'm going underground. And he's pretty much letting you know, and that's a clue directly from him, and that's in the Alive documentary, and in, of course, This Is It.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, very odd stuff. Now, talk a little bit about the transport of the body, because a lot of strange things happened there, you know, where it ostensibly, if they're moving a dead body, it shouldn't be moving as much, not just physically moving or changing, you know, the way they've got it laid out. But as you show in the film, you know, the way the body is prepared, that's the word I was looking for, undergoes a variety of changes over the course of its journey, I believe, from the, maybe the hospital to the medical examiner's office, or I'm not sure exactly the specific of the journey.
From UCLA to the LA County coroner's office.
So talk a little bit about that strange journey.
Well, you know, all the news cameras, of course, recorded that, and I wasn't home at that time. I was at UCLA, and then I was at KBC Talk Radio doing an interview, so I didn't get to see it live. And what happens is you see the body come out of UCLA on top. Now, there was a helicopter that arrived around a little bit before 3 o'clock, and I thought that was Joe Jackson arriving. I saw it land on the roof. I later learned that they thought they were picking him up around 3 o'clock, but they decided not to. I don't know what that was all about. But anyway, around 6 o'clock, the body comes out of UCLA and it has straps. It's strapped down in white sheets on a gurney and it's rolled into the helicopter. And all the major media outlets recorded this live and shot it out to the world live. And in the helicopter, and you got to remember, if there's a video of the helicopter, somebody's above the helicopter videotaping the helicopter, right?
Yeah.
You see the body move. You see, it's all in the movie. You see the body move. And then when they land the helicopter and they're getting the body out and they're taking the body from the helicopter to the actual coroner's truck, you see that it comes out without any straps. And the body bag is not a body bag. It's like sheets because it's tied at the top. What the heck is all that about?
Yeah. Yeah, very weird, very weird.
And now, the coroner did say later on, I did confirm with the coroner that they received Michael's body, at least that's what they say, around 6 o'clock. So they didn't get it at 3. They got it at 6. So it's all just so bizarre. I mean, nothing. I mean, what went right? I mean, nothing. The surveillance videos are missing from Michael's house. The police erased the surveillance videos on June 25th. Are you kidding me?
Well, now, I'm going to go back to the devil's advocate point of view here just briefly and ask, you know, maybe the point of view of the family here is that Michael Jackson's dead. He dies. This is the day he dies. And they desperately want to avoid an Elvis-like National Enquirer situation where
Why would they?
Because they don't want, you know, they don't want the photo of his dead body getting out there. And maybe they just stand against that sort of thing. I know I probably wouldn't either if I was.
You mean like open casket?
Yeah, or, you know, someone from the medical examiner's office sneaks a picture and sells it to TMZ or something like that. So they had to be, like, ultra secure about transporting the body or something like that. I'm just throwing out here the devil's advocate perspective.
Sure, of course.
What do you think about that theory?
Well, yeah, that's what I did for 8 months. I excused everything. You know, oh, it's just this. Oh, it's just that. Oh, it's just this. Oh, it can't be. Oh, it's just you're imagining. Oh, you know.
Yeah.
And then eventually it's just so much information that stacks on top of stacks to where, you know, you just can't ignore it anymore. The family, you're right. Elvis did have an open casket, though. Okay?
Yeah.
And some people thought it was a wax figure because the casket weighed 900 pounds and they thought an air conditioner was in there so it wouldn't melt in August's heat, in the heat of August. But with Michael, there was no open casket whatsoever. So I don't know what the family was thinking, what was going on. Of course, you don't want to be morbid, but Michael was not injured. You know what I mean? It wasn't
right.
Like he died in a car crash and he was mangled or, you know, he had been out of the public eye for years and he just looked awful. We see, this is it. The performances and this is it were recorded on the 23rd and 24th. So we know what Michael looks like the day before the announcement that he died. We know. We have video proof of what he looks like the 23rd and 24th. So Michael looked great, and if he fell asleep, if he died in his sleep, he looked great.
Right, right. I don't mean necessarily that there would be like an exploitative picture of something gruesome. I just mean, you know, that maybe they just didn't want someone taking, you know what I mean, how it's like.
Of course, anything
with the media,
is
they're
possible.
Always trying to get, well, look at the faked picture from the ambulance. It's kind of like the same thing. It's
right.
You know, so one picture like that got out, whether it was legit or not. Obviously, you're saying here that it's fake, but. You know what I'm saying with regards to the question. It's just sort of like me.
The crazy thing is that's the only picture they got out.
Right.
Fake.
Right.
That's the point. Okay. The media's pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. You'd think it would stand to reason that the media would have gotten other pictures. So it's either there was.
And why? And you know, the cameras today, click, 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 they take 10 pictures in a second, you know? And why was there only, you know, that picture, you know? And then there is another picture of the ambulance where things are moved just a little bit. You know, but them being professional recording Michael, there should have been, you know, a whole film of them. Click, 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 click. You know, if you get one, you should have 10.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think that then? That
Well, because it's fake. The picture's fake. It's been proven that the picture is fake. So there's no picture of Michael Jackson in distress or dead that exists. Now, with the hearing that's coming, and I am going to be credentialed media to cover the Conrad Murray involuntary manslaughter trial, they're supposed to be showing a few autopsy pictures. Now, there was a movie that's Autopsy, Michael Jackson, that the fans had protested, and it was supposed to air in Europe somewhere, and they decided not to. Well, anyway, with this movie that didn't air, there's this supposed to be this body of Michael Jackson dead, you know, half bald and this, that, and the other, and they released the dummy of a dead Michael Jackson picture. So I don't know what we're going to see in court and what the autopsy pictures are going to show. I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll get into that in a minute. Now, that kind of what you're saying here about Conrad Murray does lead sort of to what you say in the film, that the MJ fans, there's a couple of camps involved here. The camp that you're a part of, which is the death hoax, and then there's the camp that says that he was just murdered and
right.
And you know, murdered for financial gain ostensibly by all the people that stood to gain from his death, who had control over all the recordings and the library and everything else that you know, his massive estate. So what's your take on the murder theory? Because clearly,
well,
that has a little more mainstream traction, obviously, with this trial and sort of the suspicions that people have.
If Michael Jackson is dead, then I believe he was murdered, because the death is just the most stupidest, ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. You have a doctor that's supposed to be watching you while you're under an anesthetic, okay, a dangerous anesthetic. Anybody can look up Diprovan, Propofol, they're the same thing. And within the first paragraph, it says it stops your breathing.
Right.
You know, so the first thing you do, now Michael, he's been giving Michael this for 3 months. He got it delivered. The first shipment went out April 6, 2009, and all the way to, you know, June 25th when they said he died. So all of April, May, June, and you don't have the proper resuscitation equipment? Please tell me you're kidding me, okay? Then Dr. Murray doesn't know CPR. He's giving it to him on a bed, a soft surface. This is not just an MD. This is a cardiologist that knows every organ of the body and knows how they work and what supports what and what's connected to what. There's no way that you don't know that the heart and it needs to have support, and you need to do it on a soft, hard surface. Then Dr. Murray, and I'm in the preliminary hearing, and I hear this under oath, says to one of the security, I gave Michael CPR, but I don't mind. He's a friend. What doctor says a mouth-to-mouth resuscitation? What doctor is making a disclaimer about germs or homophobia or whatever by saying, yeah, I didn't mind giving him mouth-to-mouth, he was a friend? I mean,
that's just weird. Yeah.
A doctor would not say that when someone's under distress. A doctor would, because a doctor is not thinking anything like that except breathing air and breathing life into a human being. That's all a doctor is thinking. He's not thinking anything. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, when a woman's getting her exam and a doctor makes a sexual comment. You don't put those together, period,
right.
Ever, because it's medical.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just
it's medical. It's nothing but medical. And so basically nothing that Dr. Murray did that day supports any action of any doctor. Period. Period. Even if he was high, drunk, out of his mind, it still is such a level of negligence that it has to be murder. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because 2 months, I mean, I can understand Michael being desperate for Propofol night one, night three, night seven, you know, and you going, you know, we better get that machine, Michael. We better get that EKG machine, Mike. We better get, you know, make sure that pulsometer is in this room and hooked up. We better make sure that I have the tabs to put on your brain to monitor your brain activity, you know. And Michael loving his children. And Michael was pretty much very astute, very smart when he came down to medicine and medical stuff. Michael read a lot. Michael's very intelligent, knew a lot of information, and he would not allow that, because really all you have to do is order it, emergency order, quick order it, or send somebody, the security down, to go pick it up.
Yeah.
And bring it and have them deliver it. You can do overnight on things. You can get anything overnight if you have enough money.
And Michael Jackson had plenty of money, so there wouldn't be any.
He had plenty of money when he passed, because in November, December 2008, he had refinanced his debt, and he cashed out over $30 million. He paid a lot of debts, and even Dr. Tomei turned in, I think within 30, 45 days after the death announcement, $5.5 million of Michael's money.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't a fact of not affording. Period. So the level of negligence, if Michael Jackson is dead, it has to be intentional and murder, in my opinion.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever.